Welcome to the Business with Beers podcast. And this is the place where we help entrepreneurs expand their business, build their wealth, and generate passive income. I'm your host, Brian Beers, an entrepreneur who's on a mission to inspire growth from everyone around me. Remember that you need to take the actions others won't, and you can live the life that others don't. Please be sure to check out my weekly newsletter that now drops every Thursday. It includes one quote, one tweet, one podcast recommendation, plus some business and investing insight from me. It's short and it's sweet. My goal is to provide you with just a couple gold nuggets to help inspire your growth. Go to brianbeers.com to subscribe. Hello, everyone. I'm very excited today to bring you MC Lopsher, also known as the Cashflow Ninja. MC is an entrepreneur, an investor, an expert on alternative investment strategies, including infinite banking, cryptocurrency, and so much more. Welcome to the show, MC, for the second time, actually. It's been about a year now.
Yes, glad to be back, and I've been looking forward to our conversation.
Awesome. So my first question is, so why MC? What's your real name? Or what's it stand for?
Well, you know, I've got a very long-winded Germanic name. So I'm actually Michiel Christian Bester Lopsher the fifth, because the oldest or the firstborn son gets hit with all of the family names. It's just a tradition with the Afrikaners in South Africa, which I'm one. The oldest son gets punished with all of the family names, and usually my dad had the exact same names, so my grandfather did the exact same names. So you have to come up with some nicknames. So my dad was my dad was Bucky's. Okay. My grandfather was Mike. So essentially, I just became MC. My mom just did that, and that was before MC Hammer, by the way. So she beat the original MC Hammer name with MC there. And of course, I've got a son, which is the oldest child too, and he has the same family names. So the names live on.
Okay, all right. What's his nickname then? Does he have a similar two alphabetic acronym?
He just
there.
Goes by Christian. we kept that one simple.
Cool. So, I mean, let's dive into maybe, in the past, and we talked about kind of for your background, give us an idea, I guess, what your business kind of looks like. And then I want to kind of get into some of these investment strategies and some tactical advice.
Absolutely. So, I'm a business owner and investor. So I'm originally from South Africa, as I alluded to earlier. Came to the States 20 years ago. It's 21 years, really. 2001. Time flies when you're having fun. I was just blown away about the United States when I came here. I just basically came to this country with a backpack, one suitcase, $500, sense of humor, sense of adventure. Just saw the incredible opportunity that this country has to offer as far as upward mobility. It's a very special place in that way. And a lot of immigrants that come to this country sees that and realizes that. And it's funny that, there's another immigrant friend of mine that actually sent me an article, a Forbes article that was recently published about all of the immigrant billionaires in the United States. Of course, Mr. Elon Musk features pretty heavily on that list. But I thought it was quite incredible because I'm like, yeah, when immigrants come here, they're like, oh my goodness. Like, if you're born in this country, you won the lottery. You literally won the lottery because there is no limit to what you can achieve here. The upward mobility is incredible. That's why you have all the rags to riches story. So anyway, I wanted to build a life after sports, which I ended up playing up until 2007 in a rugby league here in the U.S. I wanted to build a life after rugby in the United States too. I got into investing, in 2001 too, bought my first real estate property after reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Took action, collected the rent after I put my tenants in there, paid all the bills associated with it. And all of a sudden there was money left over at the end of the month. And I'm like, this is incredible cash flow. How many times can I do this? And of course, then school starts, right? As any investor can tell you, the heart school of knocks then kicks in. And then essentially I studied what the wealthy did as far as how they managed their money and how they essentially structure their wealth and which frameworks they used. And I came across an interesting strategy, which essentially allows families in family offices to create their own banking system. And it just another big light bulb moment for me, because I essentially said, cash flow is great. It's wonderful. But how do you put some rocket fuel on cash flow and what you do with regards to cash flow? Well, banks have got it figured out. I need to learn how to become my own bank and need to figure out how to essentially structure my own banking system. And then, you know, through the process of an investor, I started to get into multifamily. And then this is now also while I was still playing sports back in the day. And I started working for a friend whose family owned a very, very large portfolio of multifamily properties on the north side of Chicago. So I started working right at the bottom, working for him, working my way up. Really essentially started, you know, just doing maintenance for him on some of the properties, eventually running construction crews, eventually doing leasing, property management, eventually managing about 1,000 units for him, and eventually being part of an acquisition team. And I was really trying to, you know, to go after this one investor that had a large portfolio that I knew that him and his partner might be interested in. And I kept going after that investor and couldn't make contact with him. The one day I went in early to the office, he just walked out of my friend's partner's office and they already closed the deal. And I sat back and I'm like, there's a lesson here for me. There's a learning moment here. What just happened? How did this just happen? And essentially, what happened was that my friend and his business partner, they're cash flow ninjas. They own that market. There was no one that was going to buy and sell multifamily real estate in that part of the city that wasn't first going to go and talk to those guys. If they were thinking of selling or buying, they would go to the main player in that space, which they were. And that's what happens. And all of a sudden, I realized, man, this is tough to compete with cash flow ninjas. How do you partner with them? How do I partner with these folks to get access to the best deals in the best markets? So it was another big light bulb moment for me. So those three light bulb moments rolled into everything that I'm doing right now, essentially with my businesses. And that's why I wanted to share that. Most folks that have heard of Cash Flow Ninja, the podcast, which is my brand, which started out as a podcast. We've been just really honored to have listeners around the world that have been downloaded millions of times in over 180 countries. It's essentially turned into an education platform, not just a podcast. And now we've got programs and books and so forth. And then I have a company called Producers Wealth, where I took from what I learned from wealthy individuals that I personally knew and from family offices. And we essentially help clients all around the United States in 50 states structure and set up their own banking system through proper cash flow management strategies, which includes life insurance contracts. And then also the capital raising group called Producers Capital Partners, where we participate in projects in multifamily and other real estate niches. So it brings it kind of all together, all the lessons learned and what I'm into and the businesses that I'm involved with right now.
So you've got like a media company, a media platform, right, through the podcast. You have an education platform through that I guess the podcast helps feed, right? And that's courses and books and teaching people about, you know, all these cash flow niches. I know you got this book out. I think we're going to talk about it a little bit. Then you have a capital group. So you help kind of fundraise to then help people like go through the noise and then deploy capital. And then you've got, you know, the infinite banking, the being your own banker, helping people set up policies. Is that kind of like the four divisions you'd say of your brand or of your business?
Yeah. One of the frameworks that I've learned from just cash flow ninjas, you know, knowing them personally or interviewing them on my show, is there's essentially a framework of people have to create capital, right? They have to create cash in some way, shape, or form. They either do it through being a business owner or in the capacity as a employee, high-paid professional. But we all have to do that, essentially. The second part of that framework is you have to position capital somewhere. Capital has to reside somewhere. And then the third part of that framework is then after it was positioned effectively and efficiently, it can be deployed into assets that produce more cash flow and also assets that produce growth. And then the final part of the framework is protecting all that, protecting your capital creation component, protecting where you position capital and protecting where you deploy capital, either in cash flow assets or in growth assets through proper tax strategy, through proper asset protection and proper estate planning. So essentially the companies that I've built addresses all of those parts of the framework. So on Cashflow Ninja, which is a media company, we share many different ideas of how to create capital. We also share many different ideas of how to deploy capital, either in cash flow assets and also growth assets. And we share different tax strategies, asset protection strategies, and estate planning strategies. Producers Wealth focuses on the capital positioning, and then Producers Capital Partners focuses on the deployment of capital in cash flow producing assets.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about your own banking system in terms of like, what does that mean to say, hey, I'm going to duplicate what a bank is? Like, what are the parallels between them?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the banking system is a very, very interesting system when you look at what essentially how it operates and how it functions. And the big thing, I think the core lesson about a bank and a banking system is proper cash flow management. If you think about it, it gets a lot of money coming into the bank from depositors. And there's a reason why folks deposit money into a bank, right? Still today, they're not paying you a lot of interest on it, but there's still online, let's just say, access to your accounts. There's bill pay. You know, there's still some things that banks can do for you. So that's the one side of it, is just people depositing money into a bank. But what do banks do after they've taken in the deposits? Well, on the back end, in most businesses is where the money is made. On the back end, they loan out money to people that need it, whether it be small business owners, whether it be people buying automobiles, school loans, home equity line of credits, and so forth. And there's a very, very nice profit between the money that they take in as depositors and then essentially lend out on the back end of their business model. And they get to benefit from that. So when I looked at the system, I look at how can you position capital to mimic how a banking system functions. How can you position capital and make deposits into vehicles or asset classes, where essentially then on the back end, you can then collateralize those assets or those vehicles and then deploy it into and acquire more assets with it and then pay yourself back the interest essentially or the loans that you've taken using those assets as collateral. So collateralization is a very, very interesting topic. Most people that are business owners know about collateralization. You know, they know that they can use the assets of the business and place that as collateral to get a business line of credit. You know, we had someone in our network, they essentially bought a piece mm-hmm. of real estate from which they operated just by placing the assets of the business as collateral and then getting a loan. So you could get a line of credit or a business loan. Most real estate investors know about how to access equity through a cash out refi or through a HELOC, essentially, where you can tap into the equity of a property and roll it into another property and buy it. Some folks might have even heard of, you know, gold, silver, and art, where you can essentially borrow up to 50% of the value of your gold, silver, and art with a proper custodian use and leverage that. And then, of course, you know, Mr. Elon Musk just did the exact same thing with his Tesla shares and acquired Twitter. So he took his Tesla shares, he placed it as collateral, got an asset-based loan, and then used the proceeds from that asset-based loan, which he's getting at almost nothing, and bought Twitter with it, financed Twitter with it. So he essentially didn't have to sell his Tesla shares. There was no taxable event, and he got to buy another asset with it. And then also, people have heard of doing that with crypto. There's a lot of folks that are doing it with crypto. There's centralized lending platforms where you can actually place your Bitcoin as collateral and get a loan up to 50% of the value of your Bitcoin, and then use that to buy real estate, for example. And those are all great cocktail party conversations. They all have different risks, right? But one of my favorite ones that I've used for over a decade now is utilizing life insurance and using a properly structured life insurance policy, a dividend paying whole life insurance policy with a mutual insurance company, structured very specifically for this strategy, to warehouse cash in and essentially use the cash value of that policy as collateral, getting a loan secured by that, and then go and use that loan and the proceeds from the loan to then acquire real estate. It's been a very, very powerful strategy over a decade that I've implemented and executed this. You know, and one of the things that I love about the life insurance, if you compare it to all the other different assets that I just shared with you, you know, on the life insurance side, if it's structured correctly, and let me just take a step back here, because a lot of folks will say, well, Dave Ramsey doesn't like life insurance. And I agree with 99% of what Dave says. I agree with 99% of what Dave has to say about that. But there's the 1% that Dave doesn't tell his audience about. And the 1% is that there's a completely different way how banks, corporations, and wealthy families and individuals buy life insurance than the rest of the public. So he didn't share that. This is how banks, corporations, and wealthy families and individuals essentially structure these policies. And it's designed to be a vehicle to warehouse capital. But the money that's put in there, the capital that's put in there, is the principal is guaranteed. The growth is guaranteed on that. And of course, you'll receive dividends as a policyholder in a mutual insurance company. It's not guaranteed, but some of these companies have been around since the mid-1800s and have paid them every single year consecutively since the mid-1800s. And of course, the growth in the dividends is tax-free. The loans, which you can get using the cash value as collateral, is tax-free as well. And then, of course, you know, the death benefit, which is kind of the cherry on top, goes tax-free to the beneficiary as well. And it's usually a multiple of an account value. So compare that. And the other thing that I also wanted to share is, you know, how much of your cash value can you access? Well, 90%, and in some cases, 95% is what you can access. Now, compare that to the other assets which I've shared, which in most cases is only 50%. And there's no market fluctuations, right? So there's no margin calls on this capital that you have in your life insurance policy that there could be on your crypto, on your stocks, and even in some cases on your gold and your silver. So it's been a very powerful place, and you need to have cash as part of an overall strategy. So where do you position cash becomes the question. Do you keep it in a bank, which benefits the bank, or do you keep it in a vehicle which you can essentially set up and structure as if it's your own bank and you get to benefit from the cash flow management of this specific bank?
Yeah, that's great. So I have a couple questions for you. So someone looking at this, they have to commit to a certain amount a year. Like, I'm going to deposit whatever, $15,000 a year, $25,000, $100,000, right? Someone can pick a number based off of A, how much insurance company is willing to write a policy for, and then B, I think it really becomes their confidence level in kind of this commitment of capital. And the way I've looked at it is like, hey, I'm going to invest X amount of dollars per year, no matter what. I'm going to invest in syndications or crypto or, you know, businesses or whatever it is, right? And so I mean, for me, the benefits I've seen and, you know, that I've actually learned a lot from you is, you know, I can put it in this policy, right? And then I can take the money out and then I can deploy it somewhere else so that the same money can earn, you know, and be deployed in two different places at the same time. The same $50,000, whatever's in there, the cash value is earning, you know, dividends on the one side, and then that same 50 grand can be deployed into an LP that's syndication or whatever that's earning money. And I think that's what's cool. It's you can get this double compound growth effect, right? Where they're both, you know, compounding at the same time, and plus like all these other benefits. But so for someone who's interested, and you know, I talk to a lot of people about this, and you know, it's like, hey, I don't want to commit. They're like afraid to commit to a certain amount because it's, you know, they view it as kind of the Dave Ramsey like model that once the money's in there, it's like gone forever and like you can't touch it, right? Where really it's kind of this mindset of I think you call it like an and investment, where I can invest in this and I can invest in that. I can fund my policy and pull the money out and then invest in, you know, real estate, a syndication, cryptocurrencies, whatever. So framing it with that, how do you advise somebody, or how does somebody go about choosing, like, how much, you know, am I comfortable storing, quote unquote, into this policy, funding this policy, paying this bill, instead of, you know, I'm going to fund my Vanguard or whatever, just keep it at TD Bank?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that we look at, and a lot of folks that have worked with Producers Wealth, you know, they start off by, let's just say, they're saving 10% of their gross income right off the top. So that might be a starting point to look at, well, where am I going to put that 10%? Am I just going to put it in a bank account again, you know, with really not a lot of benefits? Or do I put it into something like this, which gives me all of the other additional benefits? But the big thing that you're getting at here too, which is very important, is the flexibility of payments. So let's just hypothetically say you put $100,000 into one of these policies, right? Just for round numbers. And let's just say 70 to 80% of that goes towards cash value, which depending on age, underwriting, and so forth, that's probably where you're going to end up. So let's just say we do 30% goes towards the insurance initially and 70 goes towards the cash. You will have a minimum and a maximum payment there, with 30 being the minimum and the maximum being the $100,000. So a well-structured policy will have flexibility built into it where you can fund the minimum. You could spread it out over, you know, 12 months. You could pay it quarterly. You could pay it every 6 months. And then you'll have the option to fund the rest of the policy up to that maximum throughout the rest of the year. A well-structured policy will also have options for you. You know, when you fund these policies, there might be, you know, a 1 year that you don't get to that absolute maximum. And the next year you might have additional capital. With business owners and investors, I mean, it's feast or famine, right? Most of the time. So you're either busy with a lot of projects simultaneously, or, and you've got a lot of capital deployed, or you have a lot of capital on hand that you're looking to deploy. A well-structured policy will have provisions in it so that there's even a catch-up provision in there to go back 1 year to catch up what you didn't put into the policy in the previous year. So you want to have that flexibility of payment is huge, and you want to have options because, you know, we deal primarily with business owners and investors. So, you know, I always say to folks, we don't deal in hypotheticals. We see, you know, these things every day because it's feast or famine. You know, most of the time business owners or they just invested in their business, whether it be equipment, whether it be employees or investors. They just took on a very large project and even invested in other investors' projects. And now they don't have a lot of capital on hand. And now, you know, it's time to pay their premium payment. So we work out with them what's the best way to do that and how to essentially pay that. You also want to have continuity built into this, you know, so there's a lot of different things that you can add to a policy to maintain continuity, that it never lapses or disappears in the case of a worst case event. So you can add a disability waiver to it. And then on the other side, you also want to have very flexible loan provisions. you know, and it's huge. It might not sound like a lot, but it's huge to have that in place because essentially, you know, if you have flexible repayment schedules and a flexible loan loan terms, that gives you complete control over the cash flow management, which is what you wanted to achieve in the first place, right? So you have to be very, very careful of to number one, make sure that this is structured correctly with the right carrier and with a person that does this all the time personally to advise you through this and figure out what are some of the best options for you and what are some of the best ways to, number one, pay the premium payments and then also maintain the policy and then also borrow against the cash value with regards to, you know, loaning against it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I use a third party bank that gives us 100% loan to cash value. And it's like a line of credit and I just call them up and they wire me the money like the day later. And, you know, it's interest only payments to pay it back. And it's super convenient. And I think a little bit easier than going through the mutual company or whoever. We got to fill out some forms and I think take some a bit more time. So anyway, it's kind of like, it seems like there's more things in the world that are kind of supporting this strategy, which is not mainstream. And that's, so it's kind of nice to see that they're trying to make it easier to work with us on it too.
Yeah. And the big thing is what you hit on earlier. You know, if you're listening to this, just think in general, how can you get your money to work in more than one place simultaneously? Because that's the game essentially that, you know, the Elon Musks and the family offices and those folks are playing. They're playing this game and positioning capital effectively and efficiently so it does more than one thing for you. And it could do many, many different things for you if you position it in two asset classes with different features. Just think of, you know, just think of everything that you're bringing to the table. If you overfund one of these life insurance policies, you take a loan using your cash value as collateral, and then you buy real estate. You know, it's pretty powerful stuff. I mean, you have uninterrupted compounding, you know, which is tax-free in that life insurance policy. You have a death benefit, which will pay out a multiple of your account value to your beneficiaries, you know, for estate planning purposes at that point. The money that's in there is tax-free. And then also in most states, it has asset protection, like in Pennsylvania, where we live. Cash value in one of these policies are protected. But of course, you want to have proper estate and asset protection strategies in place, which I'm not, you know, I'm not a lawyer doing that. So, but you do want to have that too. But that's nice to know. And then it's you've used that money and you invested it in real estate with all of the different benefits, whether it be cash flow, tax benefits, depreciation, and more. Just think of the tax efficiency that you have in both of those vehicles. So just right there, one pool of capital is doing many different things for you and contributing to your overall strategy. And I always say to folks, you know, one of the things that you also shared is the an asset. You know, can you just earn money in your business and invest it in real estate? Absolutely. And there's a lot of folks that have done that and it's worked out pretty well for them. But do you want to put a little bit of rocket fuel on what you're currently doing? Because this will put rocket fuel and just accelerate what you're already doing, which is already a great strategy, making money and buying income with that strategy, and specifically in a hard asset such as real estate. This is just going to put some rocket fuel on that for you.
That's awesome. So what do you personally, you know, so you get a loan from your policy, you know, invest into real estate or, you know, growing your business or whatever you're doing with it. I mean, what's your philosophy? Do you look to pay the loan back or do you just pay interest only and worry about it later? Like, I don't know. There's like a math equation, but then there's like a peace of mind equation. I don't know. What's your thought on that?
Yeah. So as you alluded to earlier, there's different ways to actually get loans using your cash value as collateral. There's actually three ways to do it. So you could take it directly from the insurance company. There's a financial institution that we utilize and some of our clients have utilized that you can get it from, and also banks. So there's three ways of doing that, and picking one of those, which one makes the most sense for you, depends on your strategy. And that's where, you know, that's where just good strategizing comes in. So for me, I see it as where I warehouse cash. So most of the I just take it directly from the insurance company, because essentially, if I take a policy loan, let's just use an example. Earlier this year, there's friends of ours in our network that have projects, right? Multifamily and in resorts. So I take policy loans to participate in those investments. But now all of a sudden, I know that income coming in from my business, I can now just move back essentially into that policy by paying down that policy loan, because the opportunity becomes available immediately again to access that capital again through another policy loan. There's no limit to how many of these policy loans that you can take. So I try to pay it back. I try to cycle it through. I have money coming in through premiums that I'm paying, and then I borrow from it. Essentially, we've built up our family bank of 10 policies. So we've essentially built up our family bank, and that is now our primary vehicle for financing, you know, our businesses, and then also all of the many different investments that we pursue. So every single time there's a policy loan utilized from the family bank, we try to repay that.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. And so you use it as a float, right? So you're storing money there. You got to make an investment that you don't have the cash on hand in the bank. So you borrow from the loan, you loan yourself the money out of the policy, you invest it, and then it takes a couple months or however long to kind of earn that money back. And now you're made whole. And then you go out and do it again. But I would imagine at a certain point, after a number of years, I mean, you're going to have so much, I mean, depending on how much money you're putting in there, you have so much money that, like, I don't know if you're going to want it all in that policy, right? Versus having it deployed, earning a return. Any thoughts on, like, 5 years, 10 years from now, are you going to have the same philosophy, you think, or get a little bit more aggressive with it?
Yeah, I mean, and I get aggressive because it's the end asset. So I'm not just holding money in cash. I'm essentially just putting it through the insurance policy first, and then I'm putting it in other areas. So, my overall strategy, I love cash. I love metals. I have a cash flow portfolio, and then I also have a growth bucket where there's a lot of crypto things that I'm doing. So how I look at it from a diversified portfolio is money comes into cash. I try to put it through that system first, and then I would buy, let's just say, gold and silver as metals. Then I would leverage it to buy income-producing assets as part of the cash flow portfolio. Then I would leverage it to go and buy growth assets such as, you know, cryptos. So it's a tool that I use from a cash flow management standpoint. I always look at it this way, right? So let's just say you have $100,000 in the bank. And you're going to use, let's just say, $50,000 of that $100,000. You're just going to put that quickly in a real estate syndication. Now, you've just drawn down that account by $50,000, which now you still have $50,000 in there. $50,000 went into the real estate syndication. And now, let's just say it takes you, 3 months, essentially. Let's just make it easy math. 6 months to save back the other $50,000, sweep it in there, and you're back to $100,000. But that 6 months, you've essentially, I mean, not that you're earning anything in a bank account today to begin with anyway, but essentially in any other account, let's just say you were getting a decent return. You know, if you're getting 4 to 5% tax free in an insurance policy, it's probably around 8-9% pre-tax. You didn't get to earn it on the full amount. Where if it wasn't a policy, you funded it, you build it up, and you borrowed against it. And the proceeds were tax-free. And of course, you still enjoyed that uninterrupted compound interest, which I think is the big thing here, is how do you maintain momentum in a strategy? It's compounding, just like we do in our businesses with, the compounding of consistency and momentum. The same thing works that way with capital. You know, one of the guys on my team actually just did a case study where he was trying to build just an example of uninterrupted compounding as part of a family strategy, which is pretty powerful stuff. This is when you get in how they think in family offices. They just don't think you know, 5 years. They don't think 10 years. They think 30, 40, and then they think generations. They think 3 to 4 generations. You know, the philosophy is that you're going to plant trees, which you will never get to sit underneath and enjoy one day. But essentially, he was looking at, if you start a policy, and let's just say the parents are around 30 years old right now, and let's just say they had children, and their children started having kids at around 30 years too, and then the third generation did the same thing. You know, he was mapping out that essentially between those three generations, you could essentially have around about close to 140 years of uninterrupted compounding through this family bank strategy, essentially, which is pretty powerful stuff. I mean, and that ties into, you know, talking about a family legacy, essentially, and setting that up. So, you know, comes to the philosophy that you will plant trees underneath which you will never get to sit.
That's a great visual. Hey, so pivoting, can you tell us like a little bit about your book? It's 21 Cashflow Niches. Maybe you can give us like, what's your favorite one or two, or I don't know, ones that you kind of thought that, hey, these are ones I think people would really find interesting.
Yeah. So the book is The 21 Best Cashflow Niches, Creating Wealth and the Best Alternative Cashflow Investments. So one of the most frequent questions that I've been asked about my show, which I've been doing for 6 years by folks, is, MC, you've interviewed the best minds in business and investing. What are some of the best opportunities that you've seen? And, you know, this question came up and came up more. And eventually I was like, well, I can write a book about it, which is the book. But essentially, I put this book together to just give people ideas of just a different way of investing. You know, essentially when a lot of folks are familiar, obviously, with all the many Wall Street products and your stocks, bonds, and your mutual funds and all of the things that Wall Street sells you. But there's an incredible world outside of Wall Street in this alternative asset world where you're not just beholden to the whims of the markets, essentially, but you get to actually invest in these assets and they can do many different things for you. You know, not just generate cash flow, but also reduce taxes legally. And then also you get the benefits of the appreciation, where most of the folks investing in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds and going the very much the Wall Street strategy essentially have markets has to go up for them in order for them to benefit. You know, markets do three things. They go up, down, and sideways. So it gives folks an inside look and an idea of what the alternative asset world looks like, and then different niches which they might have never ever thought about. You know, there's a couple of ones which is pretty interesting. And I just wanted to also say this, that one of the big drivers of the book is I'm a very strong believer right now that you want to have diversified income streams. And most folks, let's just say, even in the alternative asset world, they're only just in one asset class, right? So it's we are really sharing that message of look at how you can diversify, have many different income streams coming to you in the alternative asset world, because we're living in such an uncertain environment right now that's very unpredictable. Change is here. Change is going to be rapid and continuous. There's going to be disruption. And for the most part, there's going to be chaos. Looks like every summer there's going to be chaos if you're in the United States and Europe right now. But essentially, some of the ideas that I will throw out here is, you know, when you think of growth industries, do you think cell phones are going away and mobile devices and iPads and so forth? No, not at all. In fact, 5G is going to play a very big role in the Internet of Things moving forward. So one of the niches that I talk about is actually cell tower investments, which is a fascinating, fascinating business. There's a massive demand for it. And there are essentially operators out there that will not only find a spot for it, but also build out essentially the asset. And as an investor, you get to participate in that. Now, there are investors that can participate in the development of that, which is kind of the one strategy. And the other strategy is after an operator finds a spot, puts up a cell phone tower with those investors, and get all the contracts from all the carriers at that stage, they can flip it and sell it to another group of investors, which is another sort of opportunity in that space.
That's awesome. And when they can find the book on Amazon, your website, is that kind of the best place?
Yeah. So I'll give you one more before that is music royalties. Do people in good times listen to music?
Okay.
Yeah, they do. Do people in bad times listen to music? Yep. Yeah, they do. It's incredible when I researched this niche. I interviewed someone 5 years ago on it, but essentially artists sell part of their royalties to investors to raise capital for their next projects, especially a lot of independent artists. And there's a lot of famous artists that actually do that too. And most folks would say, why don't I just own the royalties outright? I want to own all of M&M's music. No, you actually don't want that. You want them to still own those royalties because they'll keep promoting those music, you know, and they get to benefit from it as well. That's the second one that I'll share. The book is available on Amazon, Amazon.com or CashflowNinja.com. And for your listeners, Brian, when they purchase the book, The 21 Best Cashflow Niches, please screenshot a proof of your purchase and send it to my team at info@CashflowNinja.com. That's info@CashflowNinja.com. And we will give you access to a digital version of the book if you want to read it on Kindle too, an audio version of the book if you listen to books, which most people do these days, myself included, and also a curated library of Cashflow Ninjas talking about the niches in the book so you don't have to listen to about 850 episodes and more bonus goodies.
Yeah, it's great. Actually, so I took advantage of the bonus goodies because I lost the physical book and I have no idea where it's at. But now, I have the digital version, so it's all good. But anyway, if it wasn't, I'd have to rebuy it.
No, I'll send you another one.
Yeah, it's all good. Hey, so for anybody who's interested in learning more about setting up your own banking system, infinite banking, all the stuff we talked about today, you can go to brianbeers.com. And there'll be a link to download a free webinar that MC is putting together that goes into much more detail than what we talked about today. And so he's been gracious enough to put that together for all of our listeners here. And so MC, I just want to thank you for that. And I think that'll be awesome. And hopefully people can then reach out to you and if they have questions. And I mean, you're one of the thought leaders in the country on this subject. So I think there's no better person to talk to than you.
My pleasure, and I hope hope everyone finds it valuable. It's an incredible strategy, and I'm always excited to share and teach and share more about it and how I've used it.
Awesome. So then where can listeners connect if they want to hear your podcast or kind of get more into your circle?
CashflowNinja.com. CashflowNinja.com is the best place with all of our podcasts, tools, resources, programs, books, and so forth. We've got about 850 of them, so folks can learn more about what we do and stay in touch there.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on the show and sharing all your knowledge. And you know, I got a ton of notes here. I'm going to go back and look at my kind of strategy and see where I can fine tune it. So it'd be great.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
That's all we got for this episode of the Business with Beers podcast. One thing that would really help both us and other new potential listeners is to rate the show and leave a comment in iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen. Also, make sure to link up with me on your preferred social media platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find all my links at brianbeers.com. Please just share the podcast with anyone who you think might enjoy it. And until next time, remember to take the actions others won't to live the life that others don't.